It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Clinton political donors and former Clinton Foundation officials pushed the U.S. State Department for meetings, favors, and jobs for associates while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. This, according to nearly 300 pages of work-related emails, Secretary Clinton failed to initially surrender to the State Department and just released as the result of a successful lawsuit from conservative group Judicial Watch.
They extract these promises from Mrs. Clinton to stay out of foundation business, to have a bright line and a wall between the State Department and the foundation. Doug Band was communicating with the State Department to take care of, quote, associates and, in one case, a major donor.
Doug Band is a longtime advisor to President Bill Clinton. He led the Clinton Foundation's Clinton Global Initiative, and on April 22, 2009, he forwarded to Hillary Clinton aides Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills an email from an associate looking for a job entitled, quote, a favor. Band instructs Abedin and Mills the matter was, quote, important to take care of. Abedin responds almost immediately, quote, we have all had him on our radar. Personnel has been sending him options.
That's Rich Edson of Fox News. This is Sandy Rios with you. That's the first part of the report. Bottom line, Mrs. Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, this is the allegation that the Clinton Foundation was taking in all of this money from international sources, foreign sources, American billionaires, and in exchange for that money, they were getting something. And they were getting something because of Mrs. Clinton's position at State Department as the Secretary of State. And that's where this is all leading. Let's listen to the rest of Rich Edson's report, then we'll talk.
The State Department refuses to identify the contact or say if the person in question received a job, only adding officials are confident they followed all the rules in this case. A few days later, Band emails Abedin and Mills again. Quote, we need Gilbert Shaughery to speak to the substance person regarding Lebanon, adding the issue was very important. Abedin ensures Band she will discuss the issue with the then American ambassador to Lebanon. Shaughery is a Nigerian businessman of Lebanese descent and a longtime supporter of the Clintons. The Clinton Foundation says he has donated between $1 and $5 million. The Clinton campaign claims in these emails, Band was acting as an advisor to former President Bill Clinton, not as head of the Clinton Global Initiative. In a statement, a campaign spokesperson says, quote, neither of these emails involve the secretary or relate to the foundation's work. They are communications between her aides and the president's personal aide. And indeed, the recommendation was for one of the secretary's former staffers who was not employed by the foundation. Clinton defenders say the former Secretary of State and Democratic nominee engaged in no wrongdoing.
These emails were between staffers. This was not Secretary Clinton involved in this discussion. Second, here's what American people hear about Hillary Clinton in this issue. Emails, 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 blah, 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 blah.
And this afternoon, Judicial Watch released more emails, including one from 2012, showing officials informed Clinton's then chief of staff, Cheryl Mills, of a Freedom of Information Act request. They were asking for the number of email addresses Secretary of State Clinton used.
All right. Sandy Rios back with you. That's Rich Edson. Well, is it blah, blah, blah? I don't think so. Not if you're paying attention. And by the way, let me just interject a practical note. Today I'll be hosting Washington Watch for Tony Perkins, and Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch will be my guest, and we'll be discussing this at greater length. But let me just say a couple of things. Paul Mierenkopf, who writes for Powerline, reported yesterday, and I brought some of this to you, this Doug Band, who runs the Clinton Foundation. Doug Band is one of those persons that was listed as a passenger on what was called the Lolita Express flight with Bill Clinton and his billionaire friend, who was a pedophile. Remember that story, that sordid story? So this is the Doug Band. He's running the Clinton Foundation. He's emailing Mrs. Clinton's top aide, Cheryl Mills, and Huma Abedin. Of course, her defender said in that clip, It wasn't Mrs. Clinton directly. She wasn't the one that emailed it. Listen, when you're an executive and you have an assistant and you're doing business like this, they are representing you. No question about it. Something this high level, of course you know about it. You don't turn those things over to your assistant. So that's just ludicrous. But that's the kind of argument the Clintons are very good at giving. This Gilbert Chowghery, who is the Lebanese-Nigerian billionaire, is one of the largest donors to the Clinton Foundation. And so they went around the bend to arrange something very special for him. He pledged, by the way, $1 billion to the Clinton Global Initiative. And he obviously received something for that that had to do with the Secretary of State's office. Again, we'll get into that at greater length this afternoon on Washington Watch with Tom Fitton. This is the other part of the story that we just found out today. This is the new part of it, and it's actually an aside. It's CNN reporting this, and it's at the end of their report. I find this really interesting. The FBI approached the Justice Department earlier this year requesting an investigation into the Clinton Foundation. So the FBI, you know, they come, they knock on the door, they say, hey, Justice, we're concerned about the Clinton Foundation. And remember, Mrs. Clinton signed this pledge that legally she would draw the line, just like big people who have lots of money will put their money in trust and not run their businesses so that there's no conflict of interest when they serve in public office. It's the same idea, only this is even more untoward because it's actually allegedly, it seems like, directly like selling favors to enrich the Clintons. It's just amazing. It's kind of like selling a night in the Lincoln bedroom, which is what they did when they were in the White House, selling a night in the Lincoln bedroom for the right price to us. We'll let you stay there. It's just amazing. But I digress. So the FBI goes to the Justice Department and they ask, hey, you know, perhaps we should kind of investigate the Clinton Foundation here. And guess what happened? Well, Loretta Lynch said no. They just didn't see, you know, there was just wasn't enough problem. There just wasn't enough red flags there. There's just nothing there. So no, they were not going to investigate. So we've been wondering all these months, you know, what about the Clinton Foundation? Are they investigating? No, they aren't. And one might remember that Loretta Lynch met Bill Clinton privately just by accident. They just ran into each other on the tarmac. You know, they got out of their individual private planes and met for a while in Arizona recently. And we also might remember that Loretta Lynch was appointed by Bill Clinton back in Arkansas. But you know what? Nothing to see here. It's all above board. Not to worry. This is all, you know, it's all very moral and decent. So much has been made of Donald Trump's comments about Hillary Clinton opposing the Second Amendment, trying to do away with it, and then his uncareful remarks about a Second Amendment people might be able to do something about that. And then this allegation that he's, you know, sort of stirring up assassination against Hillary Clinton. It's pretty amazing. Well, Dan Bongino, who is running for Congress in Florida, he's a former Secret Service agent. He was on with us just last week. Dan is a real straight arrow, and he's a tough guy. And so he got into it with Don Lemon of CNN last night. It's actually gone viral, and I want you to hear just a part of it. We're going to put the entire exchange on our Facebook page. Now, before we play it, let me just tell you what they do when Dan really gets heated. They turn his mic down, so it's a little hard to hear him. This is what happens. Trust me, I know. I know. I've been the recipient of all of these kinds of tricks. But see what you can do to listen to the exchange between CNN's Don Lemon and Dan Bongino. Here it is.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick... If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But
okay, explain to us people who don't understand and that you want to laugh at what he meant by that.
Don, the man, I think we all know, is running for president of the United States. He probably has some data that one-issue voters, a lot of one-issue voters, vote on the Second Amendment issue. It's clear he's trying to motivate people to go out and vote based on the potential for an open Supreme Court seat. how that's clear to you, that was some kind of call to an open revolution and to start firing your weapons at public officials is utter absurdity.
No one said that, Dan. No one said that. And so, no one said that, Dan. And if he wanted people to go out and vote, why not just say, go out and vote? The Supreme Court depends on it.
Listen,
the Second Amendment depends on it. Why give some? Why say something like that if that's not what he meant? As the someone who's running for leader of the free world, shouldn't he be as clear in his words as possible? Go ahead.
Don, do you want me to? I'll answer that question. Listen, we can disagree about how imprudent he worded that, but to suggest that he was calling to violence means to me that you came into this with the idea that Donald Trump was calling to violence. Let me make the case afterwards. You didn't come into this with a clear and open mind. Listen, I endorsed Cruz in the primary campaign. I'm not a Trump surrogate. I'm supporting him.
Dan,
now.
What you're saying right now makes no sense. I'm sitting at home. I'm watching Donald Trump. I have two ears.
Right.
I have two ears and I have two eyes, and I can see the reaction of the people behind me. And we're not stupid. Every single person you have on this panel, who are very smart people, David Gergen, who's respected. Hang on, will you let me finish, Dan? David Gergen, who's respected by people on both sides, by Republicans and by Democrats, who've worked for Republicans and Democrats, who has worked for a president who's had an assassination attempt, who's lived through presidents who've been assassinated, knew exactly what Donald Trump is saying, and we're supposed to be stupid enough not to understand that and to believe the spin coming from the surrogates and for people like you. You should be ashamed of yourself.
It doesn't make it. Don, frankly, I'm ashamed that you're talking to me as if I'm a child when 12 years of my life.
No,
I was
you're
a
treating me as
agent,
a child because you're telling me what I'm supposed
you were
to hear.
How to
you're
be a TV
and you're sitting here on television lying to the American people.
You don't know crap about this, Don. You're a TV guy. I was a Secret Service agent. Now cut off my mic. Do what you
I'm
want.
I'm not
going to
cut off your mic. I'm going to tell you that you're sitting here and you're lying to the American people. You're lying to the American people, and you know that you're lying to the American people.
I'm lying. Dan Bongino. Right.
All right, that was Dan Bongino, and I don't know if you heard what he said. He said while they were turning his mic down, I was out there putting my life on the line while you were learning to be a television personality. That's what Dan said to him. He gave it to him, and that's good. I mean, you know what? I don't think there's anything wrong with an honest fight. How even dishonest fight. There's nothing wrong with fighting. I think part of the reason is the problem we have is that we never really engage in these things. And so things simmer. And so I think Dan did a great job. Of course, I believe he's right about this. Dan Bongino is right. Don Lemon is, he's accusing Don Lemon of being completely biased going into the segment. And of course he was. You know, we're going to put the full exchange on our Facebook page just so that you can see it because it's really interesting and there's more to it than that. And just by way of just of interest, you know, when you are debating on television, there are so many things that your opponents can do to discredit you. And I mentioned already that they turned Dan's mic down. I've certainly had that happen to me. I've also had some really strange things happen to me. Once when I was, well, this is not so strange, but when Phil Donahue was still on the air, I was there debating with Michael Newdow, he was the atheist from San Francisco, and Barry Lynn, who was the head of one of the big well, he says he's not an atheist, but it's one of the anti-religious freedom groups in the country. He was a big spokesperson then, and I was sitting between them. But before I went out there, they, of course, do your makeup and hair. They did my makeup, and then they teased my hair so that I looked, my hair was huge. And you see, they wanted to send me out looking like that because I'm, you know, the stupid Christian buffoon, and that's what they wanted me to be. So, of course, I did something about that before I went out, but this is the kind of thing that they do. One other time, I was the day that Lawrence v. Texas was decided, and that started the whole ball rolling to legalize homosexual marriage. I went on a television program that night. I was the only opponent to the decision. And as I talked, my face turned green. I mean, green like a facial mask. Just my face. I looked like a witch. And of course, they said, "Oh, we didn't do that." But of course, we all knew that. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it until my staff told me the next day. We watched it. It was just amazing. This is what they do, because they cannot make the point with truth. They can't fight back against what really is true. So they have to do things like that. All right, going to take a break, and I'll be right back. There's so much more to talk to about. Well, when will the day ever come when I say, oh, I don't know what we're going to talk about today? I don't think that's going to happen. It's Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
As Christians, we occasionally need to retreat from the culture war for a time of renewal. The American Family Association invites you to retreat with us to the mountains of North Carolina, October 3rd through 6th, for the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove. Speakers at this year's event will include AFA President Tim Wildman, Governmental Affairs Director Sandy Rios, Messianic Jewish Apologist Dr. Michael Brown, Marquis Laughlin, founder of Acts of the Word Ministries, and more. As in years past, we'll gather at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Capacity is limited to 400 participants, so make your plans to attend soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 2, followed by option 1. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th, in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina.
The lone survivor of a shipwreck washed up onto the shore of a small, uninhabited island. Built a hut, put everything he owned in it. He prayed every day that God would save him. And then one day, his small hut caught fire and burned to the ground. He shook his fist at God and said, "How could you?" The next day, a ship arrived, and he was rescued because the captain of the ship had seen the smoke. You know, it's hard to praise God when your hut's burning. Do it anyway. The smoke, that could be the very reason for your rescue. So hang tough and see what God does. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Thomas Rost owns the Harris Funeral Home in Garden City, Michigan, chosen by his peers as the best hometown funeral home in the nation. Mr. Rost is also a Christian man, runs his funeral home accordingly. In 2013, one of his workers announced his intention to transition from male to female. The worker went on to say he planned on showing up to work wearing ladies' apparel. Mr. Rost objected, said the worker was violating their sex-specific dress code. He also said the man violated a policy that required employees to dress in a manner sensitive to grieving family members. So the worker was fired. And now the federal government has filed a lawsuit accusing the funeral home of discrimination. You see, folks, in America, the rights of the transgendered supersede everyone else's rights, including the rights of a family to grieve in peace. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you, and it is our pleasure and privilege to be joining with Revival Fires to tell you about Truth for Youth Bible Week all week this week. If you have a teenager in your house or a little sister, little brother, son, daughter, nephew, niece, cousin, whatever, that you know really has had an experience with God, given their hearts and lives to Christ, really wants to evangelize their friends, but maybe doesn't quite know how. We've got a tool for them that is a special New Testament that has illustrations. It's a very powerful approach for peers, kids, to give their peers. And so that's what Truth for Youth Bible Week is all. Truth for Youth Bible Week is all about. And the goal is this. This season, it's 60,000 Bibles to get 60,000 into the hands of teens. I don't even need to spend 30 seconds telling you why we need this, do I? We have a serious problem in our nation, around the world, but we're worried about our family. That's our nation. And that is that our kids need to know what the truth is. And they're not learning it in school. They're not learning the truth of God in creation, God's design for man, sexuality, human sexuality. They're not learning that thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. They're not learning any of these things. And so, and besides that, their lives are not being transformed by the supernatural power of the Holy Spirit. And so that's what we're praying for our kids. And only that can only happen through God's word. So if you'd like to help, visit revivalfires.com. That's revivalfires.com. Or you can call 1-800-733-4737. 1-800-733-4737. And they will tell you exactly what you can do. We're talking about kids between 13 and 18, the ages of 13 and 18. That'll help you narrow it down just a little bit. All right. Well, something really tragic happened last night, and you may not have heard it yet. It happened in Arkansas. Let's listen.
A Sebastian County deputy is killed after he and another officer are shot during what the sheriff calls an ambush.
The two responded to a disturbance call near the intersection of Highway 253 and Boone Road.
Deputy Bill Cooper and Hackett Police Chief Daryl Spells found 34-year-old Billy Monroe Jones with a rifle and body armor. Jones shot at both of them, police say, then barricaded himself inside a home. He surrendered hours later after a standoff with police. Deputy Cooper died at the hospital.
Chief Spells treated and released. Jones is facing first-degree battery and possession of firearms charges right now. Formal charges have not been filed, and more charges are likely.
Meantime, Sebastian County Sheriff Bill Hollenbeck says that, quote, Jones wanted to cause a ruckus before a court appearance this morning.
Governor Hutchinson says the shooting shows the danger officers face statewide and how important it is for the community to support law enforcement.
You know, as a matter of fact, well, our hearts go out to that family, that officer, to the people of Arkansas. But of course, this is an epidemic. It's spreading across the country. And let me just say that Chicago now is facing their own crisis. Let's listen.
Chicago police on high alert after reports that local gangs have put together an alleged plot to kill them in retaliation for last month's fatal shooting of an 18-year-old black teen by city officers. The moment surrounding the shooting of Paul O'Neill caught on tape by police camera. Police say the teenager was speeding toward officers in a stolen car. Police fire shots into the black convertible. Later, the video shows O'Neill bleeding out in a backyard. The video is sparking outrage.
They shaking hands, they smoking cigarettes. I didn't see no remorse.
The officers involved are on desk duty. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel says the video does not warrant a plot to kill police.
It is totally unacceptable that gangs are meeting and talking about targeting police officers of the city of Chicago as victims of violence, given that they have spent their lives protecting the rest of us from any crime and or violence.
This is the latest in a string of controversial Chicago police videos released that show officers killing black teens. To date, all ruled justified, except for the fatal shooting nearly 2 years ago of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald. The officer in that shooting awaits trial on murder charges. This all comes as bloodshed is skyrocketing in Chicago's west and south side. The month of July, the deadliest in a decade, 65 people killed. In 2016, over 2,000 people have been shot in Chicago, over 430 people murdered. Those who back police say officers put their lives on the line patrolling Chicago's deadly streets.
Every cop is not the same. Some cops actually want to protect and serve.
The Department of Justice also warning that a high-ranking gang member here in Chicago has expressed a sincere desire to kill a federal officer, arguing that that would resonate much louder than the murder of a local police officer.
All right, that's just the beginning of a discussion we're going to have a little bit later. In fact, in the next segment, Rick Manning is joining me because what we are discovering is that the Department of Justice is systematically federalizing police agencies in all the major cities. And that's exactly what they want to do. We'll talk about it. The UN is pushing for this, and the Obama administration is cooperating. And what does that mean to citizens? What does that mean to you and me? What does that mean to all of us, regardless of color? We're going to talk about that. And that reminds me, you know, when we talk about this year's presidential race, Hillary Clinton has actually said that she does not want the endorsement of the National Fraternal Order of Police. Doesn't want it. And so they're very upset about that, very insulted, especially at a time when they feel under assault. And, of course, pulling at her is, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, which, by the way, has offered, I think, something like six different things they want in the Democratic platform this year. Want to be, not in the Democratic platform, but they want to be part of the campaign this year. And it's just, it's amazing. It is the world turned upside down. All of us want justice. White or black, we want what's right to take place. We need all to be protected, black and white. And surely, not every man who wears a uniform is of one color. No, they're not all good. They're not all bad. And trust me, all black citizens are not good and all white citizens are not bad. And vice versa. It's just not that simple. We want what's right and we want what's wrong, and we need justice and we need strong police. So anyway, with that in mind, I wanted to, before, because Rick is going to join us in a few minutes, I want to change the subject just a little bit. In terms of just numbers, some interesting polling out, and I don't usually take a lot of time to spell out polling for you, but this is the 2016 battleground map, according to Fox. And they say that Mrs. Clinton, of course, is moving ahead. Recent polling shows that she's widening her lead in a handful of states. The scorecard, they call it, was released Tuesday. And they say while the Democratic presidential nominee's contest with Trump remains tight, in most of the battleground states, surveys show her lead widening in New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. Most worrisome for Trump are the currently polling trends in Pennsylvania. No Republican has won Pennsylvania since 1988. It's pretty hard to see a path to victory for Trump that doesn't include a win in the Keystone State. And then it goes on to describe, you know, his attempt to reach, you know, Rust Belt, people who've been, you know, in the manufacturing and industrial sector of the United States, and the jobs have gone and left, and that's who he's, you know, pitching his candidacy to. And then it talks about the superiority that the Democrats have in the Electoral College because there are more electoral votes in the most populated states, and the most populated states tend to be Democratic. So he's already got an uphill battle. In Ohio, Trump and Clinton have been essentially deadlocked since May. The Quinnipiac University poll released Tuesday shows Clinton slightly ahead, 49 to 45. In Florida, it's a toss-up. Clinton now trails Clinton 46 to 45, according to Quinnipiac. And Real Clear Politics average shows Clinton leading by 2.2 votes. I believe that's in Florida. Yes, in Florida. So in the Real Clear Politics average has Clinton and Trump tied in the battleground state of North Carolina. So that's kind of where it is. I'm confused a little bit, I'd have to tell you, because, you know, most what we're hearing in most media is that they're apart by 10 or 11 points. So I don't quite, I don't exactly understand that. Maybe that's the national polls and these are the breakdown of the battleground states. Maybe that's the difference. Nevertheless, that's kind of where it stands today, and it affects all of us. We all need to know about this. You know, we talked about the father of this Omar Mateen, who, you know, did that horrendous shooting in that Orlando nightclub. 53 people injured and 49 dead. 49 murdered brutally. Well, you know, that his dad, Sadiq Mateen, who is an Islamist, supported the Taliban, was in Hillary Clinton's rally. And I talked about that yesterday, her rally in Orlando. But I want to go back because there was a report, there is a report from the local Orlando news there that I think is pretty gripping. It's going back in time, but they're telling the story as they see it. And as they show Hillary Clinton speaking, you can see Sadiq Mateen, I mean, just right. Every time you look at her, he's just to her right on the screen. It really is astonishing. Let's listen to the report from WPTV.
Of the brave police officers who rushed into the Pulse nightclub massacre to save lives.
Hillary Clinton speaking to a crowd in Kissimmee, just south of Orlando. Supposed to be talking jobs, but started off paying tribute to those affected by the Pulse nightclub shooting.
And I know how many people, family members, loved ones, and friends are still grieving.
Notice the man right behind Secretary Clinton with the mustache and wearing a red hat. That's the father of the Orlando shooter.
What were you thinking when she was talking about the Orlando incident?
We've been helping, and we were cooperating with federal government, FBI, and that's about it. Thank you.
Sadiq Mateen didn't want to answer any other questions.
Anything, sir?
No.
But just hours later, by chance, we ran into him at a rest stop on the way back to West Palm Beach.
Clinton is good for the United States versus Donald Trump.
He wanted to do an interview and showed us a sign he made for Hillary Clinton.
So tell us why you wanted to stop and talk now.
Well, I feel like to tell you why I stopped to talk to you, because it's very important for the United States of America, especially the election. I was invited by Democratic Party.
Just like a come support Hillary, just a regular chain email or a personal invitation?
So it came out, I'm a member. So as a member, I get the invitation. So it's nothing particular about it.
All right, so that's the first part of this. And I just think this is really stunning. It's stunning on so many levels, you know, to think that he is sitting, first of all, just as a father, he just lost his son. His son just brutally murdered 49 Americans, brutally murdered, just miles away. And he comes to this rally dressed in his cap, carrying a sign for Hillary Clinton, and he's all chipper. You see him behind Mrs. Clinton while she's talking. I mean, if this were a Republican candidate, this would almost be like the end of the campaign. But no, gee, nothing to see here. No big deal that the father of this mass murderer, who is himself an Islamic supporter of the Taliban, is behind Mrs. Clinton. Not the least of which, Mr. Mateen is totally anti-gay. He's on tape talking about homosexuality. That in itself for the Democratic Party should be, a non-starter. But no, he's sitting there. And so the reporter from WPTV, you'll hear her come back to talking to him and also then going back to the studio, and you'll just hear the discussion from these local reporters as they have watched this thing unfold. Let's listen.
What went into your decision about going to this event right near Orlando where this Pulse nightclub shooting happened?
Because I spoke a lot about that, and I wish that my son joined the army and fought ISIS and destroyed ISIS. That would be much better.
Did Hillary Clinton's campaign know that you were going to that event and sitting right directly behind her?
It's a Democratic Party, so everybody can join.
Do you think that some people will be surprised to know and to see that you were there in Orlando or near Orlando?
Why they should be surprised? I love United States, and I've been living here for a long time.
So Mateen also told me that he supported everything Hillary Clinton had to say, especially her gun control measures, saying he wants the U.S. to be a safer place. I've reached out to the Clinton campaign, though, to ask them whether or not they knew he was inside the room at the time of the rally. They've yet to respond.
All right, so there was a little more discussion there, but especially gun control. He's all in favor of gun control. Of course, it's because people were not armed in that nightclub that so many of them were brutally murdered by his son, who had a gun. And gun control would not stop a person like his son from getting a gun, even though they weren't supposed to have guns. So law-abiding citizens didn't bring any, but Omar Mateen brought one or two and did his damage. But his dad now is all in favor of you not being able to have a gun. That's why he says he's supporting Hillary Clinton. It is the most bizarre thing, and I would have to say, I made this point yesterday, but I want to repeat it. To me, the thing that we must stop and think about is why in the world is Sadiq Mateen supporting Hillary Clinton? What does he know about her that would make him so excited that he would leave his home shortly after his son has been killed himself, the loss of his son? His son is in this horrendous, he's a shooter, he's a mass murderer. And glibly go to some campaign. What is it about Mr. Mateen? What is it about the candidate, Mrs. Clinton, that would cause him to, break out of his whatever? Maybe he should have been, I don't know, normally I think people would be a little quiet, maybe a little bit more mournful, but not Mr. Mateen. And it's funny because you'd think also that Mrs. Clinton and the Democrats would say something. They would really distance themselves from him in a major way. But no, because that would offend their following of Muslims, which are in much part in this country a Muslim Brotherhood supporters, which means they are partners to this civilization jihad, to the stealth overthrow of the United States government, which is what Mrs. Clinton is partnering with the Organization for Islamic States. And with her aide, Huma Abedin, who worked for the Muslim Brotherhood, whose parents worked for the Muslim Brotherhood, that's the way it goes. And those are things that you can, easy to find, not hard to prove, very distressing. When we come back next, the whole federalization of our police force, it just happened in Baltimore, a little step toward that yesterday. We'll be back in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Did you know there's an approved healthcare choice just for Christians that's founded on the timeless principles in God's Word? It's not insurance. It's MediShare. Over 189,000 believers across America who love God and share each other's healthcare bills. It's about half the cost of health insurance, and you never pay for medical practices that go against your Christian beliefs. Best of all, the healthcare law includes a special provision for MediShare members, so you don't have to buy insurance or face penalties. MediShare is affordable healthcare without compromise.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Cross-examined with Frank Turek.
People almost invariably arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive. And a lot of people find it attractive that Christianity might be false. And so they tend not to either investigate it, or they dismiss it, or they vociferously object to it because a creator interferes with what they want to do.
Cross-examined with Frank Turek, Saturday mornings at 9 Central and Sunday afternoons at 4 Central on AFR Talk.
A quick trip to Aunt Helen's unexpectedly became an extended stay, and you're without enough of your medication. It's good to know you have real-time access to a national network of board-certified doctors with just a phone call. MD Live is non-emergent medical care 24/7, fitting your schedule. No forms to fill out and no waiting room, because all you need is your non-narcotic medication. HCBenefits.com. That's HCBenefits.com.
High school students talk about their experiences with Truth for Youth Opportunities.
I woke up one morning and I told myself that if nobody told me that they loved me that day, then I was just going to kill myself.
A few days ago, my friend Monica gave me a Truth for Youth Bible. As I was reading the comics, I felt like Jesus was giving me a big warm hug.
Through the Truth for Youth Bible, I was able to lead Charlie to Jesus. Some people say that Jesus isn't welcome in schools anymore, but because Charlie decided to accept Jesus into his life in school, he welcomed Jesus back into school.
And by the time I finished reading the comics in the front, I thought, wow, she's right. Jesus really does love me.
I asked Jesus to come into my heart, and the Truth for Youth Bible explained to me how to do that.
Help bring the message of the gospel to America's youth. To get your free Bible now during Truth for Youth Bible Week, order online at revivalfires.com. This is a simple and free way to make a difference for eternity.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Senator Jeff Sessions just pulled back the curtain on yet another ominous Obama legacy. According to Alabama senior senator, the president is willfully blind to the threat to public safety posed by tens of thousands of refugees and other immigrants from nations with traditions of Islamic supremacism. As Senator Sessions put it yesterday, quote, despite a clear nexus between immigration and terrorism, and warnings from top officials in his own administration about their inability to properly vet refugees, President Obama remains in denial about the dangers that his policies pose to the United States, unquote. So far this year, Team Obama has brought in over 60,000 from such hotbeds of jihadism as Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, and Somalia. At least 40 of those admitted since 9/11 have been tied to terrorism. We need to stop importing jihadists. There surely are too many here already. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The Justice Department says police in Baltimore routinely discriminate against blacks, use excessive force, and are not adequately disciplined. That finding comes in the wake of last year's death of Freddie Gray, an African-American man in police custody.
Oh, that's the familiar voice of Chris Wallace, setting up a news story last night by Doug McElway about what actually happened. The Department of Justice finding on Baltimore last night. Let's listen to that report.
The Department of Justice investigation found the Baltimore Police Department engaged in a pattern of discrimination and denial of constitutional rights, subjecting African Americans to, quote, disproportionate rates of stops, searches, and arrests.
Many of these stops and the resulting frisks lacked constitutional justification. And many of the discretionary arrests were simply street clearing activity.
DOJ also found officers routinely used excessive force and retaliated against people who were using their constitutionally protected speech. Blacks were arrested for drug possession at five times the rate of other ethnicities, despite near similar rates of drug use. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake asked for the DOJ investigation after the death of Freddie Gray and the rioting that followed. The report blames no one in particular, but Baltimore's zero-tolerance policing began in 1999 under then-Mayor Democrat Martin O'Malley. O'Malley's policy reduced the homicide rate by 16%, but at a cost. Arrests soared to a high of over 108,000 in 2005, equivalent to one-sixth of the city's population.
The police department's zero-tolerance street enforcement strategy became a quest to produce large numbers of enforcement actions, pedestrian stops in particular, often without enough consideration of their limited impact on solving crime and their caustic damage to community relationships.
Community leaders say a wholesale culture change is needed.
When you have a wound, you just don't throw gauze on it or a Band-Aid on it. You got to put some antiseptic on it.
With the reports released, the city of Baltimore and the Department of Justice now enter into an agreement in principle which sets in motion numerous reforms, including better training, equipment, and community relations, all monitored by DOJ observers. Baltimore's police commissioner, new since last October, welcomes the change.
Those who choose to wear this uniform and choose to blatantly disregard someone's rights absolutely should be uncomfortable, because we are not going to tolerate it.
All right, that's Doug McElway's report, and on some levels it sounds good, right? We want the police departments to be fair and honest in their arrests and how they treat different communities based on whatever, not color, but citizenship in the country. So it makes sense, right? And it's interesting, isn't it? Have you noticed that the DOJ is going to major cities? New Orleans, I remember, they actually bring lawsuits against some of these police departments. They've gone to many major cities, and the results have been, the crime rate has been going up. Well, our next guest, Rick Manning, president for Citizens for Limited Government, is expressing his concern that, as a matter of fact, what's happening is, in fact, the federalization of the local police forces of this country. And Rick joins us this morning. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. And I'm just thinking, yet one more problem. Here we go. Why is this a problem? I mean, that report actually sounded like they're going to clean things up. Things are going to be good in Baltimore now, right?
Well, I'll give you three reasons it's a problem. First of all, the policing method that they're actually attempting to eliminate is something called broken windows policy, which is how Rudy Giuliani transformed New York City from being a place where people were afraid to go to and people were afraid to live in, to a place that was truly a jewel and totally transformed the city. Broken windows policy is not a violation of Fourth Amendment rights. It's not a violation of First Amendment rights. All it does is this. It says if you have graffiti or other kinds of minor criminal activity that begin to occur in a neighborhood or in a strip mall or something, you monitor it. You send more police presence, and you encourage the building owner to fix the broken windows, to do the repairs. Because what ends up happening is when you have an abandoned place in a strip mall, and it becomes an eyesore, it tends to be a hangout joint, and you end up with all the drugs and other things going on. Then the other businesses end up moving because customers can't come, and you end up with a whole strip mall that suddenly is abandoned. And it is how neighborhoods go rapidly downhill. Giuliani recognized this. He went out and he said, okay, we're going to go where the crime's occurring. We're going to try to nip it in the bud. So that's what it did. That's what broken windows does. And that's what this Baltimore edict, this federal government edict, is going to eliminate in Baltimore. Let me be clear. Nobody wants people's Fourth Amendment rights to be violated. And the concept that one guy was picked up 3,000 times appears a year and who was completely innocent of doing anything, there's a problem there, and there's no doubt. But you do have to look at this from a perspective of how the balancing act that police have to make between trying to keep communities safe and people who are loitering, doing drugs, and the like. And so that is your balancing act that police have to do. The federal government's come in and said, the police officer, you're no longer doing that balancing act. We're taking it over.
All right. So the problem is, Rick, it seems as though, based on what you've written and what I've read in other sources, that the Obama administration is really attempting to come in and control local police departments. And actually, they're having quite a bit of success with this. And I think New Orleans, Chicago, there are lots of places where they've gone and they've actually sued the police departments and put onerous regulations on them, a veiled threat, again, of the federal government, where police departments just crumble. And then they agree to all of these. It's not just the broken windows thing. It's a lot of other things, isn't it? It's equipment. It's cameras. It's all kinds of things, restrictions they're putting on the police. Understanding that correctly?
You're exactly right, Sandy. Essentially what they're doing, and they're doing this across the country, is they're engaging in a litigation strategy, typically with the help of a liberal mayor, who will then, they will say, okay, federal government, we want you to do all this stuff. The liberal mayor says, okay. They sign a consent decree. And then there's effectively somebody who is supposedly independent, but really is tied in with the federal Department of Justice, who's overseeing the local police departments, taking away the citizens' capacity to dictate what the police department's going to do and set those policies, and through their city councils and their future mayors, and instead putting that in the hands of the federal government. This is extraordinarily dangerous. Extraordinarily dangerous, not just from a criminal safety standpoint of that the policies these guys are pushing are actually going to be detrimental to public safety. It's extremely dangerous because you don't want the federal government controlling your local police officers. One of the great debates in our Constitution was whether or not there should be a standing army, and that debate went back and forth. And the right to keep and bear arms was in fact viewed by Madison as being the counterweight to any kind of small standing army that existed in the U.S. But once you have your police departments nationalized, you have effectively put a standing army in every single community. And the United Nations Human Rights Commission came out with a report just last week that encouraged the Department of Justice to do this, not just in places where there's a problem, but in all 18,000 cities of police departments.
All right. And this, and to go further, to spread this net even wider, Rick, you were reporting just yesterday that the United Nations has a special, I don't know if it's rapporteur, if that's the way you pronounce it, rapporteur, who's sort of been observing the police and making sure that we are treating people, you know, according to basic human rights. And this is the kind of one of their recommendations. The Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice has provided oversight and recommendations for improvement of police services in a number of cities with consent decrees. This is one of the most effective ways to reduce discrimination in law enforcement, and it needs to be beefed up and increased to cover as many of the 18,000-plus local law enforcement jurisdictions. This is from the United Nations, the rapporteur, who has come here and is now telling us that we need to nationalize our police. And so the President of the United States is currently in the process of doing that. What's wrong with the UN? What's wrong with the UN telling us that? Isn't that a good? You know, they just have human rights in mind, right, Rick? They're just trying to defend people.
Well, the Human Rights Commission is made up of such human rights champions as China and others around the world who are regularly persecuting Christians. Yet now the Human Rights Commission is coming in and saying that that our police departments are violating civil rights. Here's the deal with that report. The Obama's Department of Justice requested that this report be written. They set up all the interviews that this guy who did the report conducted. They effectively rigged the report to get the result they wanted. And that's what that was about. They didn't go and talk to line officers. They talked to everybody from the ACLU to Black Lives Matter. They didn't talk to any people who were business people who see communities destroyed as their neighborhoods go downhill. They haven't talked to anybody's affected by crime. They effectively talked to advocates who are in favor of effectively tying the police department's hands and federalizing the national police force. And so that's what the UN Human Rights Commission did. This guy was in an 18-day tour of set-up meetings by Obama's Justice Department that literally was designed to create the report he gave. And that's why this is significant, is that report, at the end of it, says something very clearly, and it is that while the U.S. has a lot of interesting laws, ultimately the United States is subject to international law. And that's what needs to govern all these concerns in the United States. That's the real takeaway here, is this is a subjugation of not just a federal, but the U.N. is demanding a subjugation to so-called international law that's created not by people, but by potentates and dictators around the world.
You know, Rick,
that's dangerous.
Here kicks in my inappropriate laugh because it's so absurd. I just was looking at the membership of the United Nations Human Rights Commission. You know, it rotates, and I wasn't sure either. But it's Venezuela, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Nigeria, Cuba, China. And there are others, but those are the stars that just struck out. They're the ones that are making sure that our police force, you know, is treating people properly. This is so absurd. Well, let me ask you, before we run out of time here, Rick, where does Hillary Clinton stand on this?
Hillary Clinton has been refused the endorsement of the FOP. They said that she didn't want them to endorse her, even if they wanted to. She's standing firmly with the far left advocates, with the Black Lives Matter folk, and it is and she has made a choice that she is not going to be supportive of our law enforcement. Let me be clear, Sandy, and I think this is important for all your listeners to hear. It is extremely important that the rights of everybody get protected. That is extremely important. Our court systems are designed to do that, and police officers do occasionally go over the line. But we put policies, we put overseers in charge of them who have absolutely no concept of what it is to walk, to be in the street as a single person defending the law with a whole bunch of people who have an intent to not to break the law. And you say, we're going to take a look after the fact, and we're going to dissect what you do, and you can lose your livelihood. That is a direct attack on that cop, on that cop's ability to do his job. And quite honestly, it makes it so nobody wants to be a law enforcement officer. That's what the tearing out of this country is going to do, is when you do this kind of stuff, you rip out the whole desire for people to serve their country by being a law enforcement officer, because the cop is guilty until proven innocent in this system.
Yes, and it's actually having its effect already. I know the police around the country are saying that their recruitment levels are getting lower. We're also having higher crime rates in the cities that have this has been implemented in Newark, New Jersey, Miami, Los Angeles, Ferguson, Missouri, Chicago, Illinois, and we know what's happening in Chicago, Rick.
We're seeing homicide rates off the charts, and there really is no response.
Yes, and a policeman this morning was just killed in Arkansas, and it's a bloodbath. And of course, we could counter that with, there are so many Black Americans being killed in neighborhoods, because that's where so much of the violence is, and it's Black on Black crime. And if policemen have their hands tied, who's going to protect them? It was interesting, Rick, we're running out of time here, but there was a Black activist who was working against the police. You probably heard this story, who was robbed on the street, had to call 911, and sort of amended his position on the police after that, because the reality is we all need good police protection, and we must protect the police, and we must seek what's right and not what's wrong. Rick Manning, my guest, Citizens for Limited Government. We will put his articles on our Facebook page so you can read and share them. Rick, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Sandy. Take care.
All right, you too. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.